Thanks, Barbara. That's great. Let me add my welcome to James's. It's great to have you here in the second part of our series of dangerous ideas. I guess the question is, in our society, our culture, we want to trust. You need to trust yourself, believe in yourself. Well, is that a good idea? I'm going to lead us in prayer. Pray with me if you'd like, and then it'll be helpful to have Luke chapter 18 open as we get stuck into thinking about Jesus' words here. Heavenly Father, thank you for your word in the Bible. Father, thank you that it reveals truths to us that change our heart, change our understanding of ourselves, and change our understanding of you. We pray that tonight you would do that work in us through your word. It's in your Son's name we pray. Amen. Well, over the last few weeks, I've been listening to one of the great modern philosophers on this topic of trust, George Columbaris. There he is. His favourite phrase is, does anyone know? Anyone watch MasterChef? You can do it. Doesn't he say it all the time? Believe in yourself, yeah? Believe in yourself, yeah? Believe in yourself. There I was, about 5 or 6 metres off the ground. Luke, if you want to pop up the next picture. On a rock climb in Girraween National Park. That's actually not me. That's a famous picture on a famous climb called Scimitar. Mine was a little bit more like this. Like that. Well, maybe a little bit steeper. I really wanted to be able to climb this climb. I can't remember its name because my pride was on the line. You see, there was a guy I was climbing with who was in his late 50s. Not that that's very old. He'd only been climbing for half as long as me, and he could do it. So I really wanted to believe that I could climb this climb. Well, you know, the great thing about saying that I can do it or I believe in it is that you'll try. That's actually true, isn't it? Because if you don't think, I can do this, you'll never try. There's actually a great piece of wisdom there to think, can I do this? Trust your skills or your gifts. Have a go, because if you don't try, you won't succeed. Believe in yourself. Trust yourself. So up I went. Stay positive. Stay focused. Be the Spider-Man. Be the Spider-Man. Well, I was about 6 metres up, and I was just about to clip in at the next kind of safety point. I won't get a bit technical. And if I fell now, I would fall. Well, you fall double the height you're up from your last clip. I was going to fall 6 metres. And in Girraween, I don't know if you've ever been there, but heading toward New South Wales, amazing place you should visit, National Park. You climb on rough granite, but there's these little nuggets of crystal that stick out that haven't worn away. Some as big as your pinky, some as big as your thumb. Well, I was on one of those with one foot. And I could feel the crystal sliding up my foot, which meant that my foot was sliding down. And then it popped off. I slid for about half a metre like a cat. Believe in yourself. Be the Spider-Man. But author Philip Dick has this definition of reality. Reality is that which, when you stop believing in it, doesn't go away. I fell about 6 metres. I was wrong. I had believed I could do it, but I couldn't. So here's my question. It was only a broken ankle. Not even quite a broken ankle. No steel plates needed. Should we believe in ourselves? See, it sounds right, doesn't it? Should we believe in ourselves? Just believe in yourself. Trust your instincts. And yet, even in MasterChef, even with George Columbaris saying, believe in yourself, I don't know if you're watching the series, my wife's slightly addicted, me just mildly less so, there's only 10 contestants left out of 50. And there'll only be one winner. So when should we trust in ourselves? Well, I think there's three components. It's when you understand the situation. When you've got some knowledge or know-how or skills to deal with the situation. And then you know how to apply something to the situation. I think that's when you should trust yourself. That's the time to have a crack. But what about when it comes to God? What about when it comes to eternal matters? What about when it comes to the whole issue of dying and meeting your Creator? Do we really understand the situation? Have we got what it takes for the situation? Do we know how to apply? See, what is the reality here? Will just believing in ourselves, trusting in ourselves be a good thing? Is the reality determined by us or by God? See, it's an interesting question, isn't it? Do we trust ourselves, trust our instincts about God, trust our knowledge, or trust our goodness, or trust our moral standards? Because behind this lies an even bigger question. See, the assumption is if we start to trust ourselves or think we know, are we competent to judge this issue? See, to assume that I should trust means that I have enough knowledge to have the wider picture, that I'm competent to evaluate. So this is a big issue for me. I'm an ex-farm boy, and I reckon I can fix almost anything. Trust yourself. But so often, I have bitten off so much more than I can chew. Because I didn't know the situation. I didn't really have the know-how. And I didn't know. So I had to ring a plumber again. Again. See, can we trust ourselves? Can we trust ourselves when it comes to God? Well, I'd like you to introduce yourself to a friend of mine. You read about him in Luke 18. See, he's a guy who believes in himself. Look with me there. In Luke chapter 18, it's in sentence 10. It's a guy who believes in himself. Verse 10. Two men went up to the temple. This is in ancient Israel. To pray. One was a Pharisee and the other was a tax collector. The Pharisee stood up and prayed about himself. God, I thank you that I'm not like other men, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all I get. Here's a guy who believes in himself. Is anyone here called Philip? No, good. We're going to call him Philip the Pharisee. If anyone's here, Philip, I didn't want to go with Philip. We're going to call him Philip the Pharisee. It's going to help us kind of make him real. He's the religious guy. He does good stuff. Look what he says. God, I thank you. I'm not like other men. I'm not a robber, an evildoer, adulterer. I fast twice a week. I give a tenth. But see, he's actually really confident of his goodness. God, I thank you. I'm not like other men. Why is he so confident of his goodness? Well, he makes three moves. It's really interesting. Three reasons he believes in himself. Look at the first move. It's the comparison move. See, Philip the Pharisee, who's a religious guy, look at his comparison move. Who does he compare himself with? Robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. See, if we want to work out if we're good, we don't actually compare ourselves with everyone. See, notice he didn't compare himself with other Pharisees, did he? He didn't compare himself with Jesus. We compare ourselves with a select set of people. How select? The kind of set that we're better than. That's who he chooses to compare himself. See the set he chooses? Robbers, people who break into houses, kind of flagrant evildoers, kind of public criminals, adulterers, and then even this tax collector. And we're going to hear a bit more about the tax collector, why he puts this guy in this category. He's so good, this guy. He's better than robbers or adulterers or evildoers. But actually, you can tell, doesn't it? Philip the Pharisee sets the comparison bar pretty low. But isn't that what we do? Yeah, I do the wrong thing, but at least I'm not a what? As soon as we have to say, but at least we're making the comparison move. It's crazy, don't you think? It's kind of, you turn that around, it's like saying you're tall because you're taller than Peter Dinklage from Game of Thrones. Like saying, I'm tall just because I'm taller than him. He's only 1.35 meters. Barbara's taller than him. That's right, isn't it? Yeah, and much better looking. just calculating that Barbara was taller. Now, it's actually fascinating. A friend of mine, a lady friend, was sent to a maximum security prison in Sydney. In this prison, though, forgive me if you've heard this story before, but it quite amazes me every time I think about it. In this prison, my friend had to be in isolation. She couldn't be in general prison population. Why was that? Because the other women prisoners were beating her up. Why? Well, because she was involved in the death of her own child. And as far as the other prisoners were concerned, she was scum because she was a child murderer. She was a mother killer. They looked down on her and they took justice into their own hands. They beat her up. So stop and think about this. This is a maximum security prison for women. The women who are in there have been involved in deadly assault, murder, bashings, aggravated assault, assault with a deadly weapon, armed robbery. What right do they have to look down on my friend? What right did they have to think they were better? But they thought they were because they were not involved with the death of a child. They don't even know any of the circumstances surrounding what happened with that child and my friend and all the complications. You can imagine them saying, well, I might have stabbed my ex, but at least I'm not a child killer. Isn't this what we do when it comes to our lives? We look at the lives of those next to us and say, well, I'm better than him or her or that person in the paper or that other person who was on the news, so I must be okay. It's the comparison move. We look sideways at the people and we select. We select the people who already we know are bad and make the comparison with them. How often have you heard someone say, well, I'm not as bad as Mother Teresa? Never. Think about it, it's a pretty big mistake to look sideways at people. Think about those women prisoners. They were self-righteous and self-justifying, and they were what? Prisoners in a maximum security prison for crimes they had committed. But what they did, it's a second false move, they used their community standards. They were in this particular community, and they used the standards within the community, the culture, to say that this, my friend, was in the wrong. But couldn't it be possible that all these women in a maximum security prison, that the whole culture was in the wrong? See, are you a good person? As soon as you need to make a comparison to assert your goodness, you're in trouble. That's the first move that Philip the Pharisee makes. That's why I didn't want to call anyone Philip, because I've got some more problems with Philip. That's his first move. He makes that comparison. The second move is, did you notice he sets the criteria by which goodness is judged? Verse 12. I fast, I go without food twice a week, and I give a tenth of all I get. Well, that seems pretty good. Going without food twice a week, I'm impressed. And in terms of social justice, he's right up there. If every time he gets $1,000, he gives away 100. Every time he gives away 10,000, he gives away 1,000. If he earns 100K, he gives away 10K. That makes him pretty amazingly generous. But you notice he's only picked two criteria. Jesus summed up the whole of the Old Testament like this. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul, with all your strength. And he's saying, well, I go without a bit of food and I give away money that I can afford to give away. See, he set the criteria so he meets it. And so he says, I'm good. This gives us a really big clue why it's dangerous to trust our own judgment about ourselves. Because we choose the criteria. And we choose the criteria so that we meet it. We might even admit that we do wrong, but we still say we're good at the core because of some criteria. You want to show me these two cartoons? This is one from Adam 4D. Yeah, man, this is a skinhead Nazi. If you're a skinhead Nazi, I don't mean to pick on you particularly, but he's a good example, I think. Yeah, man, I'm one of the good guys. Sure, I occasionally murder and steal, and I have a collection of human bones at home, but in my heart, I'm a good dude. Now, listen to his criteria. Sure, I've got a few bodies, if you want to know the next one, Luke, I've got a few bodies under my belt, but as God is my witness, I've never raped anyone. People who do that are the scum of the earth. I told you. I'm a pretty good guy. I think that kind of seems over the top. The other day, someone here at church was talking to someone in their workplace who said, I'm a good person because I treat women well. That's his criteria. I'm good because I've got this narrow thing that I've accomplished. And because I know I do that, I can declare myself good. Great. But what about all the things you've never done? What about the envy, rage, jealousy, anger, theft, murder, hatred, lust, greed in your heart? Oh, it's okay. I treat women respectfully, those that I'm not lusting after. See, here's the reality check. We might set a criteria so we meet it. But is it God's criteria? Is it God's criteria? Have you set a criteria by which you have decided I'm good? But there's one more move that Philip the Pharisee makes. See, actually in the end, trusts himself. Go back to sentence 11. He says, the Pharisee stood up and prayed, what's the next word? About himself. God, I thank you, I am not like other men, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all I get. God, you have to accept me because I'm so good, so wonderful, so generous, so much better than this. I do this and this and this. See, why does this matter? Well, look at the first sentence in this section. In verse 9, there's a whole bunch of people around who are like Pharisees, who are like Philip the Pharisee. This isn't an imaginary character. Look at sentence 9. To some who are confident of their own goodness before God, that's what righteousness means, perfection before God, and looked on it down on everyone else, Jesus told this parable. There are a whole bunch of people standing around next to him who thought exactly like this. And see, those two things go together. They look down on others. They compare themselves on others. So that they could be, it could be like this, so they could be confident in their false goodness. Or they were confident in their goodness and looked down on others. It's hard to know that they both are entwined. Is this you? Do you trust in yourself and your own goodness? There's another man in the story. The first one is Philip the Pharisee. The second guy, let's call him Tim. No other Tims in here. I'm going to go with Tim the tax collector. See, there's two stories here. And look at him, sentence 13. But Tim the tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but beat his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. Now, tax collectors, what were they like? They were politically bad. They were spiritually bad. And they were morally bad. They were politically bad because they worked. And the Romans had conquered Jerusalem at this time. And they conquered the Jews. And they worked for the Romans and collected money on behalf of the Romans from the Jews. That made them politically bad. They were spiritually bad because if you think about this, they were Jewish people. They lived in a theocracy where God's supposed to rule. If they started to work for the Romans, it means they'd given up on God. They'd aligned themselves with the Roman cause. Spiritually, they were bad, and morally, they were bad. How did they make money? Well, they kind of sent the Roman, they had to get Roman taxes. It was an occupied nation. So they went around to all the Jewish people and said, could you please fill out this tax form? Because the Romans who are occupying you would really like some money. And all the Jews said, of course, we'd love to give the Romans our money. No. No. The tax collectors went around with ugly thugs with weapons and said, give the money to the Romans now, and I need to take my pay from the top, so you need to give some extra. They were hated and they were corrupt. Now, this Tim the tax collector, he was probably good at his job. Good at collecting taxes. And he was probably good at providing for his family. But he was a bad dude. I think probably, maybe Tony Soprano. Anyone a fan of The Sopranos? He provided very well for his family, working for the mafia. He was a good worker for the mafia. Now, Tim is in the temple before God, and look what he does. Look at the text. He stands at a distance. He won't even go up to the front of the temple. He does not look up to heaven. He knows he can't look God in the eye. He can't present himself. And he certainly doesn't compare himself. Instead, in anguish, he beats his breast and does just one thing. Speaks. God, have mercy on me, a sinner. See, he knows he's not good. He knows he can't trust himself. He calls himself a sinner. He's done things he's ashamed of. But the move here is, do you notice, instead of justifying them, instead of pointing to others and being better than them, sure, I collect taxes, but it's not my fault. Sure, I collect taxes, but I've got a family to feed. Sure, I collect taxes, but he doesn't do that. He says, God, have mercy on me. See, that takes tremendous courage. That's actually, in some senses, truly trusting yourself. It's actually seeing yourself, looking at yourself for who you really are, and acknowledging your faults and your wrongs and your weakness and your brokenness. instead of denying what you're like. Tremendous courage. A true kind of trust in some ways. But he knows he can't trust himself because he's a sinner. So he calls out to God. God, have mercy on me. And I think this guy, Tim the Tax Collector, is a great definition of a Christian. What's a Christian? Someone who says, God, have mercy on me. I'm a sinner. So look what Jesus says at the end of this comparison between Philip and Tim. Verse 14. He says, I tell you that this man, Tim, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. He's saying the tax collector went home right with God. He went home accepted by God. Why? Because he didn't trust himself. He humbled himself, it says, and he will be exalted. That means lifted up or accepted. I'm just going to say it because it's so hard for us to get. The tax collector is accepted by God, not because he's good, not because he trusted himself, but because he said, God, I need saving and I cannot save myself. God, please save me. He admits that he's a fail when it comes to God. So he calls out to God. And God says to him, yes, I accept you because of my mercy. Yes, you are saved, not because of the things you've done, good or bad, but because of my son. You've saved because you've trusted me. What was Jesus' assessment of Philip the Pharisee? So he says that. He says, everyone who exalts himself will be humbled. What does that mean that he exalted himself? He lifted himself up and effectively he said, God, I don't need your mercy. I don't need your forgiveness. God, I'm good enough for you as I am. That's what he was doing. Saying, God, you have to accept me. He exalts himself into the presence of God. Standing at the front of the temple was putting himself equal with God, you have to accept me. I don't need your mercy. See, if we think we don't need God's mercy, we are saying, God, I am good enough for you on my terms. What does Jesus say would happen? Disaster. Disaster. See, he says, whoever exalts himself will be humbled. He would stand in the presence of God and say, God, you have to accept me because I believe in myself. And God would say, that is not my criteria. And he's cast out of the presence of God forever. Well, why is Jesus so confident that this is God's understanding? The last couple of minutes. Because he was the one who was going to bring God's mercy. Not long after this, in Luke's kind of record, eyewitness account, Jesus hung on the cross between two, sometimes some translations say two thieves, but potentially two insurrectionists, two terrorists. And he's dying on the cross, facing God's anger at sin and brokenness. Jesus is taking the punishment that we deserved for trusting ourselves and going our own way without God. And it's amazing. One terrorist looks down on Jesus. Even though he's on the cross with Jesus, he's next to Jesus on the cross, and he throws scorn on Jesus and looks down on Jesus and ridicules Jesus. But the other terrorist, he knows he's done wrong. And he turns to Jesus and effectively he says, have mercy on me when you come into your rule. Have mercy on me. He says, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And Jesus said, yes, today you will be with me in paradise. That terrorist hadn't done any good works. He just called out to God for mercy. Are you trusting in yourself when it comes to God? That will end in disaster. Or are you trusting in Jesus? That will end in salvation.